Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, November 20th, 2019. This is a special meeting of the WRFCAC, the Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. We have a quorum present with one gentleman absent or maybe late, Mr. Rogers. So I will establish the quorum, call the meeting to order, and we will have a moment of silence followed by the pledge. Rise for the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, good afternoon. Are there any announcements from any of our staff, our committee members? All right, I'll open it up for public comment, items on the agenda. And if there's anybody, please signal, raise, walk to the podium. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Terry Simons. I haven't previously been to one of your meetings, so I guess I don't quite understand your protocol, but I'm assuming when you're calling for public comment, this is not for public comment of items not on the agenda, but for, in fact, the entire agenda, which I understand to basically just be a review of the 60% plans. Okay. I first looked at those a few weeks ago. There seemed to be some glaring issues. I'm not going to go into detail on them. You have enough qualified people sitting on your board and under your employ to where hopefully before any grading's done on site, some of the key things, like I didn't see a soils report for the site owing to the implied cross-sections that I saw in the grading plan, although I didn't find any cross-sections, it would appear that there's going to be some significant cuts and some significant fills. But without a soils report, I don't know that you're not going to be exposed to some serious opportunities for extras on the part of the contractor for quote-unquote unknown conditions. By the way, I'm a lifetime general engineering contractor, so I know that side of the business. Second or third, whichever, I was particularly caught by the fact that there's a area defined as a future access way that goes into the back portion of the ranch. It's about a 60-foot wide easement and or right-of-way that does not seem to have any kind of grading plan or profile for it, because my assumption is it's not part of the city's purchased property. Yet I think that to imply that there's going to be a road there and to not incorporate whatever measures should be appropriate at this time while you have that much equipment on site to make sure there's a passable right-of-way through there does not seem appropriate. I think you're just kicking the can down the road to a lot of future problems, particularly since that there's a creek right there that goes into the estuary. Lastly, I haven't seen any evidence of anybody applying to the state of California's SWPI program for a SWPI permit for this site. Because it's over 1 acre, I think state law still requires that the state issue the permit for that. So hopefully that's a few thoughts. I don't see a three-minute clock. Can I talk as long as I want? I could say a lot more, but I'll let it to somebody else move on as long as I can reserve a little time later after I've seen the presentation. Thank you.
That would probably be best, yes. Thank you. We usually don't use the clock if we don't, if we're not inundated with comments. But
my first appearance here, you'll get the clock out if I become a regular. Thank you.
Ditto. Duly noted. Thank you. Is there anybody else for public comment, please? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. So that will bring us to the special agenda meeting item, one and only one, review of the 60% plans for the WRF facility and the conveyance system. I believe we have a presentation first, and both of those links were on the agenda and on the www.morrobaywrf.com site.
I was going to say my links didn't work, but I went on the website of the city and tracked my way through the hierarchy to get to the plans.
They didn't work initially, I think, because we were getting the agenda put together, but eventually...
Well, the ones that I got, and that was a later one, it didn't work either. So I went ahead, it was throwing up stuff that my Norton antivirus didn't like. So I just went in, I went into the city's website. So I was able to find it.
Documents. Okay, great. Thank you for that. So, Rob or Eric, are you going to do the presentation?
Yes, Eric will be giving a brief presentation going through the kind of the overview of both sets of plans, and then we'll take your comments and summarize those for the design, both design teams. Just wanted to point out that we still have a couple printed copies down at the offices if anybody does want to take a look at the hard copies. So we've had a few folks come in and take a look at those. We had them well hidden in our conference room there. I guess we didn't let it widely spread that all our folks up front didn't know that they were there. I apologize for that. But now everybody knows that we have a couple sets of plans there for public review. Thank you.
Okay.
Eric?
Thanks, Rob. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Eric Caceres with the city's program management team. So thank you for having me here this afternoon to give a brief presentation and to facilitate discussion on the 60% design plans for the water reclamation facility and the conveyance facilities portion of the city's water reclamation facility project. Again, staff recommends that WRFCAC receive and file these two interim deliverables for these two major components of the project. So we've put together a brief presentation here today, and what I'd like to do is to walk through the individual components of these two components of the project and answer any general questions that you may have on a process-by-process basis, any major comments or discussion items that you have, and then any specific detailed comments. So we're going to be taking notes during the meeting. We'll take those comments based on our notes, and we will put them into a spreadsheet format, and we'll provide responses to those comments, and we'll make sure that those get back to you and to City Council. And then if you have any detailed comments that you've made on the hard copies or if that you want to send to the program team, we can also include those, because I know these are big documents and there's a lot of design detail, so there may be some actual hand markups or something that folks might have. So for the WRF facility, there's really about six or seven main process areas of the treatment plant. We have the headworks where the raw sewage enters the plant and goes through the first level of treatment. We have really the workhorse of the wastewater treatment plant itself, which is the biological nutrient removal facilities and the membrane bioreactor that we've talked a lot about. Then we move into some of the advanced treatment facilities that we're going to be using to produce the potable reuse quality water, which is a reverse osmosis, and then the disinfection process, which in this case is a ultraviolet advanced oxidation process. Then we have conditioning for the purified water, essentially to add minerals back into it before it goes into the ground. We have storage at the facility for that purified water. And then we jump back onto the biosolid side and we talk about residuals management, so the byproduct of the biological treatment process and how those that material is handled at the treatment plant. So this is the water reclamation facility site. So as you can see, from this general site plan that was included in the 60% design drawings, the facility is really split into two main areas. In kind of the southwest area, you've got the administration building, and then you've got a covered storage for city some public utilities vehicles and equipment, and then we move into kind of the process-related facilities as we move kind of to the east, and we have the main treatment processes that I just went over. So as we typically do, we'll walk through the treatment process starting at the beginning. So we'll start with the headworks process. So the headworks really consist of three main components. On the far right on the slide, we have the core screen. So for this the city's treatment plant, because we're using a membrane bioreactor and we need to screen out any inorganic material that could damage the downstream fibers, we've got two levels of screening. So we start out on the very far right side with core screening, which takes out material that's less than a quarter inch. Then we go through grit removal, which we use to remove sand and grit from the flow stream. And then we go through on the very far left-hand side of the slide, we go through two fine screens that then take the material and screen it down to a size of less than 2 millimeters. All of these facilities, I should say, are fully redundant. So you have a fully redundant unit for fine screening, core screening, and for grit removal. Any specific questions we can answer on this?
Had a quick one. I was looking on my iPhone, on my laptop. It looked like it was going to the RO tanks prior to going to the MBRs, and I would have thought the RO happens after the fact.
There is an RO feed tank.
There's a
tank ahead of the RO that provides some buffering so that you're sending a constant flow to the reverse osmosis.
But it's not the actual RO units themselves at the end of... I assume that's after the MBRs.
That's after the MBR.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Anything else?
No.
Go ahead when you're ready.
Okay. Then we walk through and go to, as I mentioned, essentially the biological treatment, biological and filtration processes for the treatment plant. If you start at kind of the top of the slide there, you've got your two what we call activated sludge tanks where we're providing the biological treatment, removing the organics and converting the nitrogen and removing the nitrogen from the flow. And then we send it to the two smaller tanks, the two tanks that are there towards the left-hand side of the slide. Those are our membrane tanks. That's the tanks that house it's a membrane bioreactor. It houses cassettes that consist of a number of fibers, and we use to filter the wastewater and separate the treated water from the biological solids that have been produced in the biological treatment tanks. Any questions on this particular area of the treatment process? Okay. We then move on to, and we'll talk about them together, which is the reverse osmosis system and the advanced oxidation process. Again, this is really, we'll call it the clean water side of the house as it pertains to our particular project and the process. So in this building, we house the reverse osmosis units. So the two racks that are towards the right-hand side of that slide in the building, and then they're difficult to see from this isometric view, but we also are showing two UV reactors that operate in parallel there. We take the water that's been filtered with the MBR, and again, we've got to go to another level of treatment for the water that's going to be injected into the ground, so it goes through a reverse osmosis as required by the state, and then also goes through the advanced oxidation process.
I got a question on that one, Eric. On the UV process, that's the only form of disinfection being used, or is chlorination? Is there a dosing tank somewhere along?
We will chlorinate the water going to the outfall.
So you're chlorinating the stuff out to the brine.
Correct. Yeah, we're not sending and we're not UV treating.
But you're not on the water going to the IPR.
Yeah, we also have to disinfect that water. Again,
do chlorinate.
Yeah, it's part of the regulations for Division of Drinking Water. That is part of our process for getting to our...
Like I say, I had a little trouble trying to follow everything. Sure. Look at a lot of plans.
Since we're stopped here, if I can interject a question. So I thought I had heard, and this doesn't particularly apply to this, but I thought I had heard we were going to have some sort of photovoltaic system. Is that still on the table, or is that not on the table?
We set aside area on the site for about 2 acres of photovoltaic. Likely, when we do that, it'll be through a power purchase agreement rather than us building the facility ourselves.
Okay.
I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's two enterprise funds paying for the whole project, but is at this point here where we start putting it all on the water side?
So the project is split basically 71% wastewater, 29% water. So this is really going to the water cost, the majority of this side of the project.
Now, I know we've discussed this before, but in the treatment at the biomembrane stage, you're not only getting secondary, you're getting tertiary treatment. Are you applying that same ratio between the funds on the membrane portion of the plant?
It's basically the 71-29 is an overall. We picked the particular processes that are related to water and wastewater. The resultant was 71-29. Council made a decision actually to discharge tertiary treated effluent to the ocean. They wouldn't discharge anything less than that, and the membrane bioreactor provides that tertiary level of treatment.
Are you applying that same ratio to other items, such as the grading of the site? Is some of the water funding
yes.
to pick up part
yep.
of the grading aspect?
Grading of the site, the storage, vehicle storage areas, equipment storage areas, it's prorated to its particular enterprise fund's impact on the site.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Then we have the conditioning and product water storage. Again, this is also on the clean water side of the house. We passed the purified water that is very aggressive because we've now taken it through reverse osmosis and stripped out a lot of the dissolved constituents there, and we run it through two calcite contact tanks. Where we essentially remineralize the water and make it more like the groundwater that we're going to be injecting into. We do this improve the compatibility and to eliminate any leaching of any material that might be in the soil when we do the injection. And then we have the product water storage tank here, originally sized for 500,000 gallons. It's one of the things that, it's this point is stage in the design. We have it shown as 500,000 gallons. One of the things that we're working on, we may be able to reduce the size of this tank. We may not need that much product water storage. And so that's something that's currently on the table, and we're going to make that decision here shortly. And so between the 60% and the 90%, this might change a little bit, the size of the tank.
Can I ask you, Eric, the calcite treatment, will that take care of adjusting pH for?
Oh, correct. Thanks. We also have pH adjustment throughout the treatment process.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
This tank is capable of handling about a half a day's worth of effluent?
It's capable of handling, 500,000 gallons, and the treatment capacity of the potable reuse side is just under 1 MGD. When you take into account the losses for RO, we're planning around an 80% recovery for our RO system. And so right now it's a little more than half.
Anything else?
No.
Okay, go ahead. Thanks.
Then we jump to the final piece of the process, which is essentially the biosolid storage and dewatering. The byproduct of the secondary treatment process is the production of what we call waste sludge, and that will go into the two large concrete tanks that are over there to the left side of the slide. That's a wide spot and a storage where operations can manage those residuals, and then they pass through a mechanical piece of equipment that's they're sitting underneath that canopy that essentially takes that that sludge that's majority water, more than 99% water, and it takes out a lot of that water and gets it to a consistency of about 20% solids, where it can then be picked up and hauled away by a hauler and taken of and used for a number of different things, either composting or it's still for at least a while can be used for alternative daily cover at landfills, but those residuals are taken from the site and disposed of.
Are you gonna dry out any of that sludge before it's taken away?
No.
going to be kind of wet.
Yeah. It's we call it affectionately cake, but it's a kind of a maybe not a granular material, but it's a material that will stand up and won't leak free. It won't leach free water. And so it holds on to the moisture that it has in it. But it will not be, so the current treatment process that the city employs at the existing wastewater treatment plant is sludge drying beds that gets it to a higher level of dryness and less water content for the material leaving the site.
How are you going to handle this is where your odors are going to come from. How are you going to handle that here?
Most of the odors, this material is very well stabilized before it gets to this stage. So in the biological treatment process, it's undergoing treatment, and then it's also sitting in the sludge holding tanks and undergoing additional aeration and treatment. I don't believe we have active odor control at the dewatering process. Yeah.
Now, you're not doing any digesters with this particular plant.
That's
just activated sludge comes over, you press it, and you throw it in the bin to dry.
Correct. Yeah, we don't have primary treatment. So for pretty common for smaller treatment plants, depending on the treatment process that you employ, if you don't have primary treatment, you don't usually have conventional anaerobic digesters.
Oh, okay. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. This is the chemical storage facility. So we have a number of different chemicals that we have to use at the site. And so they're all centrally located. They're all centrally located here. We have a number of things, including our bulk sodium hypochlorite storage, our bulk sodium bisulfite storage for dechlorination. We also are going to have sulfuric acid at this location for pH adjustment. We have anti-scalant that we use for the reverse osmosis process, and I'm missing one. And citric acid for cleaning of the membrane. So we've got a number of different things that are housed here in this one location where we've got secondary containment, and all this material is secondary contained. Any questions about the chemical storage facility?
One. So normally a building like this, if it was enclosed, would be in like an H occupancy. So the fact that it's open on all four sides, does that get it out of the H occupancy and just give you a U occupancy building? Or how does that work exactly?
I would need to get back to you on that specific
okay.
Code question.
And the only reason I ask is the distance to other buildings and distances to, you know, other mm-hmm. things. Okay.
Yeah, I can definitely get you the answer to that.
If there were a chemical spill at this location, I know one of the PCOs put everything together like you show it. But is there some containment around this area if there was ever a chemical spill, someone dropping the thing off and it spills?
Yeah, there's. It's not shown here, but it's shown on in the drawings. Probably shown in the. It's. You can see it. Probably not see it as well in the site plan. But if you look at the non-isometric views of this facility, you can see there's a concrete area with a containment sump that's located where the chemical deliveries would be made and where in that area. Any other questions?
Not right now.
Go ahead.
So I did want to give a quick update on a couple of different items as it pertains to the water reclamation facility. Again, these aren't necessarily directly related to the 60% design, but I just wanted to give a quick overview around the permitting requirements specific to the water reclamation facility, and we'll go through some things on the conveyance facility. So in terms of this is kind of the gambit of permits that may or may not be required for a facility like this, and this is the list that we started off with, and as I go through here, we can address each of these. The first one is the NPDES permit that the city needs for discharge to the ocean. The city's got a time schedule order and has the requirements that are going to be in its future NPDES permit, but there's a process that the city needs to go through to get that final NPDES permit. That permit will be needed prior to operation of the facility, so not prior to start of construction. We're currently in the process of preparing what we call the report of waste discharge, which is the recipe that the regional board then takes and uses to develop the city's permit. also from the regional board, a project, our project requires a general construction stormwater permit that was mentioned in public comment earlier. This is the SWIP that people refer to. That's needed prior to the start of construction, and the city has submitted that application and uploaded into the SMART system for the project.
If I can ask a question right there, is the SWIP going to be applicable to the conveyance system as well, or is it going to be two different
SWIPs? It'll be a separate SWIP because it's a separate project. It's a separate construction project, but there will be a separate SWIP required for that project. The next permit has to do with it's a general stormwater permit, essentially a stormwater permit that would be required after construction. We've been working with the regional board and working with them and presenting our stormwater design to determine if this type of permit would be needed. And through the consultation and work with them, we've determined that a general stormwater permit for the facility will not be required by the regional board.
So this permit, while it is outside the city limits, we're holding it to the city's stormwater requirements. So they're using our LID manual, which is very similar to the county's for their urbanized area, but it's outside of a county urbanized area. So I guess technically it could be argued that it doesn't require a stormwater plan, but eventually it may be annexed to the city, so we wanted to make sure that it complied with the city's stormwater requirements.
Also from the regional board, one of the things that you may notice from the drawings, there is an erosion feature that was identified on the treatment plant site. And through consultation with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, it's determined that it's not jurisdictional to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, so no Section 401 permit is required. Similar is true for Army Corps of Engineers. We've been consulting with them over the last year, and we also do not need a Section 404 permit since they are not taking jurisdiction of that erosion feature either. The same is the case for California Department of Fish and Wildlife. A stream bed alteration permit is not required for that erosion feature. Now, not all of these things hold true for the conveyance facilities, which we'll talk about in a second, which is a separate permitting effort. We also have a number of air permits that are required. We have from the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District, we have naturally occurring asbestos on the site, so we need to get prior to the start of construction, we need to get that naturally occurring asbestos permit, and we have that permit. Also from the Air Board, we need an authority to construct or a permit to operate for the emergency generator, and that's needed prior to operation of the water reclamation facility, and that'll be prepared by the contractor with assistance from the program team during construction. From the Coastal Commission, we need a coastal development permit, and that is required prior to the start of construction, and we've received our coastal development permit for the project, and we're taking a bit of a phased approach to the coastal development permit, and we'll be receiving authorization for construction for individual components of the project. So at this point in time, we're getting authorization for construction of only the water reclamation facility, and we'll need to submit some additional information on the conveyance facilities once we finalize that design to the Coastal Commission so they can issue authorization to start construction on that portion of the project. And then from the state Water Resources Control Board, their Division of Drinking Water, we also need a permit for the potable reuse effort. That's dictated by the Title 22 regulations, and that's needed prior to or slash following operation of the water reclamation facility. So we'll go through, and we're developing the engineering report, and we'll work through to get that facility permitted, but there's also a demonstration period after the facility started up. So technically, the city doesn't get the permit for that until after the facility is completed and it's gone through the necessary steps to confirm operation.
Do you also need something from the Division of Water Rights too at the State Board?
I don't believe so. No. In terms of property acquisition, again, another thing that's important for the project as we move forward, there's really two pieces of property that the city is going to be accessing or needing for the construction of the water reclamation facility. The Tri-W property, that purchase agreement has been finalized, and the city's currently in escrow. One of the things that was written into the purchase agreement was the city has the ability to access the property and start construction before escrow is completed. So that is something that escrow and closing of escrow doesn't have any impact on the construction schedule. For the Martz property, we need some easements there, and both temporary and permanent. The city negotiated right of entry, and that's been finalized for those. And so the city has access to that property as well.
And where's the Martz property, actually?
In between Teresa Road and the Tri-W property.
So oh, okay. So it's to get from the end of South Bay Boulevard up to the property.
Correct. The, the permanent piece is the road, and then we also are, if there's some temporary construction easement that we are going to use for our lay down and trailer storage area.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Maybe I was looking at the conveyance site plans wrong, but when it gets close to the roundabout, it looked like it was crossing what is possibly a future CVS. Is that going to be on private property, or is that going to be in the PUE, or it looked like it was going under the proposed parking lot for that CVS that nobody's heard about?
So as part of the conveyance system project, we'll, there's a couple of pieces of right-of-way that we will, or easements that we'll need, and that's one of the locations when we go through the conveyance system portion of the project. Eric will address those particular project needs. But, yes, you are correct. There will be a need for easement there where we cross that corner.
And is there any, well, I don't want to say finalization, but is there any or is there any idea of when that CVS is possibly coming, or is that something that no one's that seemed like a surprise to me when I saw it on the site plans?
That's a private development project. They have not submitted a formal application to the city yet, so stay tuned for that. It'll be going through. Your when you wear your other hat, you'll be able to look at that project. Through the Planning Commission.
But that won't affect the conveyance project at all. So anything that we would approve for the CVS would be contingent upon allowing us access?
Correct.
Okay. Back on this easement to get up there, because it was something that Terry brought up about the other road that was shown in the Memorandum of Understanding. Is this separate from that future 60-foot dedicated road?
That's correct. We don't. We show the road coming up to our facility, and the future road. We're not doing any construction for that future road. Actually, one of the mitigation measures in the EIR, we're keeping construction a minimum of 50 feet away from the. I believe it's the top of bank for that drainage, what's called drainage number two in the biological reports and in the EIR. So we're not doing any construction in that area for the future roadway.
Yeah, the only thing we will be providing is kind of a driveway approach or basically a Y there so they can connect to their existing dirt road at that point for 'cause I would guess that cattle operations will continue there for quite some time.
Okay. So that was the water reclamation facility. For the conveyance facilities,
Before you leave it, Eric, just for the overall, I'm going to explain. I did not go heavy through the conveyance or through the actual treatment plant because, quite frankly, it's a design build, and the other is actually something where you have no idea what it's going to cost yet, and those are plans that people have to bid, like the fellow who spoke at public comment earlier. And so I guess one of the questions I still had on the other, the facility itself, are the RO units moving from down, or are you putting in brand-new RO units throughout?
No, these are brand new RO units.
So the existing ones will stay down there to treat the wells along what's that called, the Embarcadero area.
Mm-hmm. So you want to give me a question?
So our existing what we call our desal plant has the old seawater desalinization that was put in the early 90s started as an emergency project, and that is really non-functional without major rehab work on that. The brackish water RO side, we have a couple of treatment trains there that treat water coming out of the Moro Valley. So the well fields that are adjacent to the Lila Kaiser Park and the hotel area there at Atascadero Road and kind of the southbound ramp. It takes water from those wells, runs it through the brackish water RO for nitrate removal.
And those are supposed to remain, correct?
Those will remain, and we'll continue to operate those as long as we have a high nitrate.
So the building's going to remain?
That existing desal building will remain. It'll probably be remodeled because we don't we'll be removing those desal pumps there and trying to figure out a way to move the existing calcite tanks into the building.
Now, does Cayucas have any ownership of that particular part of it?
No, that's...
That's purely Morro Bay, so you don't have to...
That was settled in the 1983 MOU with Cayucas.
Oh, okay. So
we got the courtyard, paid for the courtyard area.
Didn't want skeletons in the closet going forward, if you follow what I mean.
I did have one comment more than a question, but so if we're going to enter or if we're going to attempt to enter in some sort of a power purchase agreement for, you know, photovoltaic, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be prudent for the city to kind of consider maybe battery storage as a backup power system for essential facilities instead of generators or relying solely on generators, maybe having a third option in there since we're going to look at that anyway. So maybe just something to think about.
Any other questions on the facility?
Anything else up there?
I'm good.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Thanks.
So we'll move on to the conveyance facilities. So the project components, there's essentially three main project components. We've got the pump station A, pump station B, and then the conveyance pipelines. Those are the three larger components. This is essentially a schematic of the way that the city's collection system will operate. With the new treatment plant and with these two new pump stations, and it shows in the drawings, it shows the how lift station, the city's existing lift station number 2, located down at the Embarcadero, how that interacts with this new system. It will pump directly into the force mains that go to lift station B, and then the city's existing lift station number 3 brings flow back to the existing wastewater treatment plant will tie into the new force mains that will be coming up South Bay Boulevard from Quintana. That lift station is located down at the corner of South Bay Boulevard and Quintana. This picture here shows a couple of the isometric views from the drawings itself. To the right, you have the actual wet well as well as the above ground piping for the lift station. One of the things that's changed, and this was depicted in the 30% drawings and the basis of design report, was essentially the original concept was to have a single large pump station located down near the city's existing treatment plant or existing courtyard. With the construction of or with the addition of a new lift station, this station actually gets much less complicated and much more much easier to build and much more cost effective. So it's a submersible lift station there with three pumps, and then to the left hand side that is the electrical building that will house the electrical equipment for the plant.
Eric, in this one, I think originally before they went to two lift stations, the idea was to have everything here. But when you have your high winter flows, you had several pumps in there, like 4 extra pumps, I believe. But they didn't all need to be down at the lower level, do they not, at the wet winter flows when those have to kick on? Are any of those in this configuration?
No, I don't believe so. I'd have to go back and look at some of the older go back and look at the basis of design report regarding there were a number of pumps that were going to be located at this facility. So there are really three options that were looked at in the basis of design report. One was kind of the base option, which was we're going to put all of the infrastructure in one pump station to pump both dry and wet weather flows. And then there was a concept that was looked at with two pump stations, where one pump station would operate during dry weather and the other pump station would really only operate during wet weather. And then this concept, which ended up being the preferred concept, was let's use the city's collection system and let's use these two lift stations most efficiently, and let's not send everything back to or minimize what has to go back all the way up to the existing wastewater treatment plant site. Let's split the city into the city's collection system in two and take as much as we can through pump station B on a 24/7 basis, as well as fully utilize lift station A. So with these concepts, we have many fewer pumps that are only operating during wet weather.
Does the large force main number two go all the way to this pump station?
It starts at this pump station.
So they will see high winter flows coming out of this?
Oh, I'm sorry. Lift station number two comes in to the force mains leaving this lift station. That's correct.
I just wanted to make clear, because when I was looking at the pump stations and how they're set up, pump station A is not putting a ton of hydraulic head on the water as it gets to B, and then B is like this mass, is what I'm seeing, a massive pump that kicks it all the way up. I assume the reason you're keeping the pump station A low is so that that lift station 2 can actually get into the pipe and not have to overcome that head. Is that a safe assumption?
Can you rephrase that one more time? You're saying the depth of lift station?
Well, lift station 2, I don't know if it has the hydraulic head to overcome what's happening at B. It probably does with what's happening at A. Is that the reason?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it goes breaks to gravity. Okay. Yeah, Mr. Miller just corrected me. There's a small change. We're actually breaking the lift station 2 force mains are actually going into the pump station and are breaking to gravity there. So we didn't.
I'm sorry. It's breaking to gravity, but what I mean is you had to put it in prior to pump station 2.
Because it couldn't overcome the head.
The
yes.
head is so high on that one. And the only other thing that caught my eye looking at your energy grade lines and hydraulic grade lines running across there is at the high point in Quintana, it honestly looks like you only got about 5 or 10 feet ahead at the low condition. Mm-hmm. You feel comfortable with that?
Yeah.
I'd hate to see it go to vacuum or, you know,
sure. Yeah, and that's something that we're looking at. We're also in the middle of and very close to completing our surge analysis as well, looking at all of the requirements for the air vacs and any other.
So you noticed it too.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I'm trying to sort out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I had a question about pump station A and the base flood elevation. Can we expect that to be above the base flood elevation, or is that going to be exempt?
Rob, you want to go ahead and answer that?
Sure. It'll be all mechanical equipment, electrical mechanical equipment will be above the base flood elevation, as will the wet well lid.
Okay.
Rim elevation, and Morro Bay has a 2-foot freeboard requirement, so it'll be 2 feet above the base flood elevation.
But the building might not be.
The building will be also.
Oh, the building.
Yeah.
The electrical equipment. Yeah.
And because that's where the electrical equipment is stored.
I had one other question. So it's all going to be submersible pumps. There's no wet well, dry well operation. It's purely wet wells.
Correct. That was the original configuration. Was
right.
Wet
no, I just wanted to make sure I was reading it right when I'm looking at the.
Yeah, they're all wet. It's all wet pit submersible.
And it's triplex. It's not a duplex facility is what I saw.
Both of the lift stations are triplex, the new lift stations. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Lift station B, you can see here, there are larger pumps, but the wet well is significantly more shallow, and you also have over to the left is the electrical building, again, to house the electrical equipment. If there's any specific questions here, again, it's a wet pit submersible station with the three pumps. All of the top of the wet well will be above the base flood elevation, as well as the floor slab of the electrical building.
Are you going to have some standby generation here?
Both of the lift stations have standby generators at them.
Will it be a mobile generator?
It will not.
It'll be stationary.
Correct.
And kind of a silly question, and forgive my ignorance here, but do these buildings typically have bathroom facilities in them, or would it be, you know, is that something that's required by OSHA, or is that more of a design architectural feature?
Yeah, lift station A is going to have a bathroom facility. The drawings show a bathroom facility at both lift station A and lift station B, and the lift station B bathroom's been eliminated.
Okay.
And then just to go to the permitting discussion for the lifts, the conveyance facility, excuse me. Again, the general construction stormwater permit will be required, so the SWIP will be required for this project. And so that will come sometime prior to the start of construction. It says wharf here, but this should say conveyance facilities. The Section 401 water quality certification will not be required, as is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Their Section 404 permit will not be required either. And you'll notice that we will be crossing a couple of drainages, Morrow Creek and Willow Camp Creek. Both of which are jurisdictional for both the regional board. There's the state of the water and, water of the state and water of the United States. And so traditionally you would need those permits. However, based on our construction methods and coordination with both the Army Corps of Engineers and the regional board, we've determined that no Section 401 or 404 permit will be required. So we modified the design to eliminate the need for those.
Are you going to require 404 permitting from the Corps for the outfall?
That was one. I would have to go back and look at the, depending on what happens with the outfall, there may be a permit required, I believe, by the Corps. That was one of the things that they mentioned in their letter that they sent back to us based on the consultation.
This letter that you got from the Corps, can that be found somewhere on the city's website?
I need to think about if that's been submitted. It will be submitted to the Coastal Commission if it hasn't already been submitted to the Coastal Commission, so it would be available.
No, it's not on the website yet, but we're working on getting all project documents up there too, and then looking on reformatting it so they're a little bit easier to find, because right now it's just a long list you need to scroll through, and having maybe some drop downs there so we don't have to scroll through every document if you know what area you need to look at.
Yeah, the Coastal Commission specifically requires that we provide them justification that we don't need certain permits before we're allowed to start construction on the conveyance facilities. I'm just trying to remember the timing and if we submitted these letters to the Coastal Commission before they issued the notice of intent. So it may be in that material that's been provided to the Coastal Commission previously, but it will be sent to the Coastal Commission here when we've got to comply with another one of the special conditions that they've put on the project.
There was a utility bridge in there that I was remembering. I thought you had previously said that we were going to end up going trenchless underneath the creek, and I didn't realize there was a change there. Or
no,
I remember that wrong.
The intention has been since the beginning is to use a pipe bridge for Morrow Creek. There's a couple of different reasons why, and I don't have the designers here, and I'm trying to remember exactly why. Other than there could be more of a heightened concern with frack out with that particular drainage, and so one of the reasons that we went with the pipe bridge is for that, and I believe it's also more cost effective to use a pipe bridge in that location. That leads me to the next permit that we're likely going to be required, which is the stream bed alteration permit for Morrow Creek. Mm-hmm. So we will likely need a permit for that. We're doing all of the construction for that pipe bridge outside of the top of bank, but we're going to have to do some kind of minor trimming and removing of bushes there for that portion of the project.
It will be above top of bank, but it won't be outside of edge of riparian vegetation.
I had a question on looking at the public improvement plans on this. They did the stationing along the center line. Is that center line of the pipe trench, or is that center line of the road that you're showing there? It looked like it was out in the middle of the road all the way up Quinton. I couldn't quite tell, though.
I would just need to take and check in
okay,
on that.
Okay, well, I guess my only concern is if you're going to be right in the middle of the street, I got a feeling the whole street's going to be shut down as you move through that area. Am I wrong, Rob? Or
There will be segments that will be shut down for periods
of time. I mean, completely. It's not like there's going to be shove them over to one side or the other.
I mean, the goal is to get it over to one side in those locations that we can.
Well, I mean, but it looked like it was run down the middle of the street. That's why I wasn't sure if that was sewer center line. Sometimes people follow the sewer
It's line always a great sometime. Debate over where you put that center line stationing on non-road projects, whether you use road center line stationing or sewer line stationing.
Well, I was trying to figure out if they're in the center of the road or if, I wasn't quite sure looking on my screen.
Yeah, and speaking of that, when I was looking at the conveyance plans, it was kind of hard to tell. Is there a required separation between the IPR line and the forest mains?
That's one of the things that the details of that trench section, we're actually currently working with the Division of Drinking Water on that. We've had a couple of meetings with them specifically on our trench section because it is a bit of a unique situation because we've got treated water that's going back to the ocean. We have potable reuse water that's not exactly potable water, but it's potable reuse water. And then we have raw sewage running together. So there's a number of things that we're doing in order to be able to optimize that trench section. One of those is the method of construction. So one of the things that we determined early on, the project team determined early on, is we're going to be using it's going to be likely fusible PVC. We're likely going to bid fusible PVC and HDPE together. But with that type of pipe material, we can get the pipes closer together. But there are separation requirements that are required by Division of Drinking Water, and we're working with them on that.
And the HDPE can handle the kind of heads you're talking about?
Well, so you bring up a good point, which is we would likely bid both of those together, but for HDPE to get the same pressure rating, you need a whole lot more plastic, essentially.
Yeah, that's kind of, I could understand the fusible PVC.
Yeah, we just had a presentation by the fusible PVC manufacturer a couple of days ago in our office, and essentially, I mean, plastic pipe is the cost of it is per pound of plastic, and so you just need a lot thicker wall thickness for HDPE. Right. So we're going to likely bid both of these together, but at the end of the day, we would expect that fusible PVC would be the more cost-effective and would win out.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Couple more permits. Like the water reclamation facility, we're also going to need the authority to construct and the permit to operate permits for the two emergency generators there at each of the lift stations. Again, the coastal development says coastal development permit. No, that's not correct. The coastal development permit is required for all components of the project. And as I mentioned, we're going with a phased approach with they're kind of doling out their construction authorization on a project by project basis as we're ready to start construction for the different phases of the project. And then for this, the Title 22 engineering part as well. In terms of property acquisition, I didn't have the private property listed on here, but we're currently working with both Vistra Energy and PG&E to acquire the necessary easements for construction of the pipelines. There's a process that we need to go through for the PG&E easements through CPUC, and we're currently working through that process now. That is my presentation. If you guys have any other questions, any specific questions on the conveyance facilities, on the WRF?
Okay, I did have one more question. It's actually on the front end, the actual site itself. And I have to agree with the guy who stood up in the public comment portion, because as far as grading plans go, I don't think that thing's anywhere close to 60%. All I see is proposed contours and site plan, basically. I assume you have a soils report, or whoever is designing it does indeed have a soils report, because I know we've seen enough consultants come through doing most of these things. But I did notice they also use 3-to-1 slopes on the backside, so I assume that was predicated based on said soil report rather than going steeper and minimizing grading somewhat. So yeah. I assume there's a soils report going on here.
There's actually two soils reports. So the city did a, and we call it a program level soils report back before the RFP was issued for the design build teams. And so the design build teams needed enough information. That soils report is not necessarily suitable for final design, but it was enough for them to be able to go back and say, okay, we can price the cost of this earthwork and the construction of these basins and everything else based on that. They've done a confirmation geotech report, so they've gone through and said, okay, well, let's set aside the programmatic document for a second and let's go through and do a full-blown construction geotech report for the entire site, and that's been done.
Because I was going to say, as far as the overall plans go, they could be at 60%. I have no clue. But I did feel the grading plan was a little suspect. I didn't see any spot grades given anywhere in the parking lot, you know, the roads, everything else. And, you know, it's hard to do off proposed contours because the surveyor's out there trying to interpolate between two points. Yeah. You know, you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, and we actually have a final, we will have a grading plan that will be finalized before we do the grading. So that's with the design build, kind of the sequence of events for this design build. We started with their basis of design report in 30%. Right. Then we go to 60%. Then we have the final grading plan so we can start grading. Then we'll have the 90%. And then the 100% drawings won't be finalized until well into construction.
Well, that's why I always thought the grading plan usually led the pack when you go through design builds. And I wasn't quite sure that was happening.
Eric, did you say that with the 60%, the grading plans, that's what you're going to start construction with?
No, there's a separate grading package, 100% stamped and signed set of grading drawings that will be used to start construction.
So thank you, Eric. That was very complete, and as well as all the questions and answers. Go ahead. We're going to do some more. Yeah, okay. So I thought before I open it up again for public comment that we would have some discussion or more clarification or questions. I know you've been taking some comments, but we may have some additional recommendations. So, Val, if you'd like to start us off, please.
Actually, it's just more questions in regards to the construction. And I thought I read in the city manager's report that the traffic plan is in the works. You're starting to develop the traffic plan. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're developing in tandem with or working with the design engineer for the conveyance facilities is we're putting together all of the detailed restrictions, construction implementation and restrictions. And then the contractor will actually be developing, based on those, the final traffic control plans that will have to be submitted and reviewed by the program staff in the city at the start of construction. So the design engineer is not developing the detail, the detailed traffic control plans. We're putting together all the restrictions that will go into the front-end documents that will lead to the development of those plans.
Okay, because I was wondering, because the discussion a few minutes ago was that in regards to where that those pipelines are going to go, primarily along Quintana, it wasn't clear as to whether or not it's going to be in the center of the road, it's going to be pushed to the north, or in some instances will be to the south. Taking into consideration, so I don't know how you can do a traffic plan and not know where your pipes are going to be.
Yeah, so one of the things that we're going to be starting here on Monday of next week is, I think it's Monday, if I got my dates right, is the potholing is going to be done. If you remember back when we talked about the amendment for the design conveyance facilities design engineer, we've got a number of potholes that are going to be done through Quintana and other areas to confirm existing utility locations so that we can finalize exactly where this trench will sit in the roadway.
So in some instances, it may be to the north, it may be to the south, it may be in the center. The other thing, too, the feasibility of night construction and those areas where it would be most appropriate. if you're going to be looking into that.
We've been working with some. We've solicited some pipeline contractors that we've worked with before to get some feedback on in terms of constructability and some things. And you know, there's a couple of things with night construction. One is there's residences that are pretty nearby, so that's one consideration. The other thing is safety. Is with this kind of construction, you also have safety issues. We have some mitigation measures in the environmental document that limit night construction. More specifically, as it relates to the treatment plant site, maybe not so much in the conveyance facilities portion. And so there's a number of different things that we're looking at. But we've heard from some of the contractors that we've talked to that it may make sense to do certain connections and certain pieces of work during nighttime hours. But again, there's overarching things like impacts to residences and then safety of the construction crews and the city crews.
Did you want to say something?
I just want to mention that there's kind of different flavors of nighttime construction. There's, you know, kind of after normal business hour work, and then there's the more traditional, you know, you start at midnight and you work till 6 o'clock in the morning, where, for example, on a, you know, highly used transportation corridor, you see that quite a bit, where you're not trying to shut down lanes but trying to get that work done. But, you know, nighttime construction can be a hazardous operation to the workers and to the public. Just on the location of the pipelines, so these 60% plans do show the location of the pipelines. They're generally north of the roundabout. They're generally on the east side of the easterly side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you pass the roundabout, the kind of the south westerly side of the road, because, you know, of course, the project isn't oriented true north, south, east, west. Make no bones about it, this is going to be a major construction operation, not only the trench, but the traffic that needs to get through there to actually dig the trench and take the spoils away. So I think we've seen, you know, typical sections of that take up quite a bit of roadway to do that. But, you know, we're not opening up the entire length at one time. The contractor will be limited to segments that they can open up at one time to reduce those impacts, but can't downplay the impact that it will have during the construction. It will be a major construction operation on that street.
I was going to say, seriously, that's my biggest concern. I mean, the treatment plant itself is out in the middle of nowhere, and it's not going to bother too much of anybody, but I do see this thing cutting through town. I'm venturing to guess it's probably sugar sand under that road out there in Quintana. I could be wrong. But, you know, the idea being that you're either laying it far back or you're going through a shoring through the whole thing, and I didn't know what the plans were there for that. So
I have one more question.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. When you're through, are you through?
Okay.
You've mentioned a number of other agencies, including the Army Corps and State Board, the Air Board, et cetera, different permits and everything. But there's two agencies that you haven't discussed, and that's the Fish and Wildlife Service and the status of the additional work that needs to be done, and the status of your consultations with the State Office of Historic Preservation, and when you anticipate those consultations to be completed.
The consultation on I'll talk about the State Historic Preservation Office. The consultation on that should be completed any day. We've gotten the State Historic Preservation Office let us know last week that they were ready to sign those documents. I don't know if they've been sent yet by the signed versions have been sent by the EPA to SHPO to have those signed, but that process should be done any day. And then in terms of Fish and Wildlife, we're still working through that informal consultation process.
And working with them to identify the mitigations or the avoidance measures that are going to be required in order to accommodate their needs at the wharf site.
We did also neglect to mention one more agency you might be familiar with, Caltrans. We will require encroachment permits from Caltrans, and we're working with their permits section on that process right now.
Yeah, we'll need an encroachment permit. We have an encroachment permit for the work that will be done, the potholing work that will be done. We do have some potholing work that's going to be done, need to be done in Caltrans right away. And then the other thing that's required by our programmatic agreement that we've got with the State Historic Preservation Office is we have to do some additional underground investigations, likely going to follow shortly after the potholing, to better define some of the archaeological sites that are near to the conveyance pipelines. In terms of this treatment facility, our programmatic agreement and the associated treatment plan say, based on the likelihood of all the work that's been done, don't need to do any additional treatment don't need any additional investigations for starting construction on the treatment plant site. Not the case for the conveyance facility. So that work will probably be completed in January, February, but we'd like to get it started as soon as possible after we go through and do the potholing.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. I was a little fuzzy on the jurisdictional issue. So I've heard from Scott Graham with Community Development that the Coastal Commission is the jurisdictional agency, but that the city will be doing its own permitting. Is that correct?
Being that it's a public works project, our attorney's opinion is there's no building permit required for this project. The quality control for construction will be provided by our program management team. So we'll be overseeing that work. So there's no grading permit that will be issued by the city. There's no building permit for the structures that will be issued by the city.
So as I understand it, the design build team will also be inspecting their own work?
They Correct. Will be providing inspection, providing those reports to us, and we'll be doing confirmation inspections.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any more? Barbara, I have a few.
Go ahead, and I'll have some too. Go ahead.
Kind of what some of the discussion is about agencies, but to what agencies were these plans sent to? Who has them? Like the EPA, did they need to see them?
They didn't need to see 60% drawings. This is basically an interim design deliverable.
Okay.
Not a regulatory review submittal. So it's an interim deliverable so that we can check to make sure they're on the right path.
Also, I noticed that both, like on the WRF plans, they're dated July 30th, and the pipeline plans are dated September 6th, so why are we just now seeing them? They've been sitting around for quite a while now.
We've had them for quite a while, and our original plan was not necessary to bring those to WRFCAC since they were an interim deliverable. But based on the request of council, we brought those to WRFCAC.
Have you guys reviewed the plans and find them acceptable at this stage?
We have reviewed the plans, and we've provided our comments back to the design build team. So any comments on either the conveyance facilities or the water reclamation facilities have been summarized and sent to them and will be reflected in the 90%. So we have spreadsheets that we've put all our comments in. We take comments from the city. We combine them all together. We give those to the designers or the design builders, and then when they come back and turn in their 90% or their subsequent deliverable, they also turn back in that sheet, and they have responses to all of those comments.
Seem to be forgotten is the mitigations in the EIR, and then, of course, I guess we're expecting some mitigations from the EPA. And then, of course, there's the conditions from the Coastal Development Permit. Have they been fully incorporated into these designs?
The mitigation measures are being incorporated into the design. So the mitigation measures from the EIR, the special conditions that are required by the Coastal Commission have also been addressed. So one of the things, so I'll talk about the wharf specifically here, because we've gone down the path with the Coastal Commission the furthest with the wharf, because we're ready to start construction on the wharf. There are specific conditions. We sent them copies of the 60% drawings, and they have specific requirements that they have, and we've addressed all of those requirements and documented how we're going to be complying with those requirements. So that was sent to the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission reviewed that, and based on that, they've issued the coastal development permit. So there will be additional, will likely through the consultation work that we're doing with Fish and Wildlife currently, there's likely going to be additional avoidance measures that are going to be in addition to what was in the environmental document, and those will become essentially enforceable through the loan agreements that we end up, the city ends up signing with both the EPA and with the state board for the SRF loan.
On those loans, do we need to have 100% final plans and approved by the EPA and the state board?
No.
on the pipeline plans and the cover sheet, it says that that set of the plans is volume 3. Is there a volume 1 and 2 somewhere?
I believe volume 1 and 2 are reserved for the specifications, the two volumes of specifications. The design engineer did not provide specifications with the 60% design. We're going to get those here with the 90% design.
I believe in their contract they originally said that they would, at this level of 60%, provide us with the specifications and an updated estimate.
We do have the updated estimate. The updated estimate is reflected in. We didn't present that, and apologize now that you mentioned that. Those latest numbers that are from the 60% design were reflected in the October quarterly report and the budget reconciliation that was done for that report.
Also, on the cover page of the pipeline plans, it says. In the lower right corner, for information regarding this project, contact, and then it's blank. So is there a contact person that should be there on those plans?
We'll need to work through the specific requirements for this cover page. There'll also be requirements for the state. So the state revolving fund will have some requirements that we'll need to incorporate into this cover page as well before these are finalized.
There'd also be a city engineer's approval on these plans, authorized to go out to construction on those plans. That's not reflected on there yet.
Task 7 of the original contract with Waterworks Engineers says, provide support for Planning Commission's review and approval efforts related to the WRF left station and offset pipeline project, participation in 2 Planning Commission meetings. Will the Planning Commission see these things?
I don't believe it's required for the Planning Commission to review these plans.
Okay. Going down the plan sheets, I noticed there's some, it looks like some sheets are missing. It jumps from sheet 6 to sheet 11, then sheet X, then sheet 15. Are there missing pages in the pipeline plans?
I would need to look through the plans. I don't remember if those are missing. I just need to look at the drawing list that I believe is on sheet G2 and just check that against that to make sure. It does look like there are a number of drawings that are shaded out in that drawing list, meaning that those are identified for the subsequent design submittals but aren't included in this particular submittal. As I'm looking at that, there's a number of electrical drawings that are not included there.
I was going to say the same thing. There was a lot of reference sheets that were not included.
That were not included.
But it was
60%,
so I just kind of talked about it.
Yeah.
On sheet G14 of the pipeline plans, it has some underground storage pipes. How many peak hours of storage can those pipes handle? 3 hours? 4 hours?
It's 3 during average flows and about 45 minutes during peak hour flows.
Okay. On the sheet G18 of those plans, I guess that's part of the hydraulic gridline sheets. It shows the IPR line tying into the existing city's water line. Is that allowable? Shows up again in the plan sheets. 05PP9 shows the IPR line connecting directly into the city's water line.
I'm familiar with the plan sheet, and that's just the way that that's line shown. The line is not connected and connecting, into the city's potable water line. We need to show some additional detailing there that will be shown in subsequent design deliverables. We don't exactly know where that termination point is going to be, where the next project, the recycled water facilities project, will take it over to the injection well site. And so it was kind of left there. It's shown essentially in the trench section, but it'll come over to the side likely, and we'll have some detailing there about how that pipe will be left.
All the plan and profile sheets, they should show real clear where the fire hydrants and the cross connections are to them. It's very important, especially if somebody's trenching near a thrust block to a T to a fire hydrant. That can be extremely dangerous. A lot of trench accidents have happened when those blow out in your trench and somebody drowns. It would really be helpful, and I think this was brought up earlier, that there's some cross sections of the pipeline construction zone showing the trench width, depth, the pipe placement before installation and afterwards, clearance to other underground utilities, the bedding, temporary stockpiling, the truck haul lane, fence lines, and whatever else is helpful, such as curbs, gutters, and pavement restoration. Also, a question, where will the surplus displaced excavated material be placed?
That surplus material will be placed at the wharf site. So that's one of the things that we worked with the wharf designer, and the additional soils that we've identified from the construction of the pipelines can be placed at the wharf site.
So you're going to take all that material and take it up to the wharf site?
Correct.
I think I've mentioned this before, but will you show the casing pipe in the state highway? And I believe you're going to put all pipes inside one casing. Is that the idea now?
I would have to just check with the pipeline designer on the specifics of the trenchless, or excuse me, the design in that location in terms of the casing.
So will all the pipes be slid in together at one time? Because I don't think you could put them in separately.
I don't know if we're going to do one pull or multiple pulls. Again, I'm not exactly sure.
Well, when they do, they skid the pipe,
mm-hmm.
and they put banding around it and slide it through, and if you try to slide another one on top of that, it's going to catch, and they have to be pushed through. And you got several.
These are also fusible pipes, which is another benefit of using fusible pipe, is it's easier to pull it through the casings as well. So I can get the details on that method of construction exactly.
On plan sheet 7, I believe that's in the area where the bridge is going to be. It doesn't show, there's a lot of trees that will have to be removed, and there'll be a lot of vegetation. And I think this was a topic of the letter from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about the habitat there for the frog. So do we know how much of that is going to be removed? Because the Coastal Development Permit never spoke to any of that, and neither did the EIR. So I don't know that's going to be a major impact. You'll be a big noticeable gap missing there as you drive by the freeway, and that's all the stuff, vegetation, trees, everything will be gone.
The EIR mentioned in the mitigation measures, it had some information in there on tree removal, and we provided a specific response to Fish and Wildlife. I don't have that in front of me on exactly what we plan to do in the riparian area when we construct that pipe bridge there.
Well, it isn't so much just the riparian area, but as you leave the bridge site, you immediately drop down into a trench that's going to be 7 feet deep, and it's going to be like 8 feet wide, and then you need to have a place to put your pipe on one side, your spoils on the other side, with this open trench. It's going to be a huge swath running through there, clearing everything. Contractor's going to have a bulldozer and just mow it down. You know what it's going to look like. That's going to be a major impact. On the horizontal drilling down by Willow Camp Creek, I think it was at our last meeting in September, you'd indicated that that would occur on the PG&E side of the bike path, but now the plans look like it's over in the state highway right away now.
I just have to get back to you on the specifics of that HDD and where exactly that's going. That's something that we're still working through based on easements and the kind of looking at the geotechnical information and figuring out the best location for that.
Does it appear as though you have to take any of the fence line along the power back of the power plant out?
I can look into that. I don't know the specifics of that off the top of my head around
because that's a secure area. They got security cameras up everywhere. They got the security gate there, and if the contractor wants to take it out, you know, the PG is going to have a fit.
Now, we're actively working with PG&E for a number of different aspects of this project. One being the easements and the construction of the pipeline through that area. The other with both the temporary and permanent power at the wharf site. So we're working with them on those things.
This was brought up before, but in that piece of property that I guess CVS Pharmacy owns, it looks like the pipeline alignment jumps over at least into the, like in the sidewalk. I'm not quite sure if it's on private property or, but it looks like it'll probably have to remove a bunch of street trees to do that. Are we going to lose a bunch of street trees in that area?
Yeah, we've been working with that property owner. So the likely the boring pit will be right where that propane tank is. Yeah. So it'll be on. We'll need to acquire an easement from them to construct that. So, yes, it will be on, when it's constructed, it'll be within a city easement there. And the property owner is cooperating with the city on that easement location.
As the pipeline alignment leaves the roundabout and goes down Quintana Road to South Bay, that's the old state highway, so there's concrete underneath the pavement there.
Yes, there's concrete panels there. Not full width of pavement from what we've found before.
Probably about 15 feet wide.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that an item in the contract to remove the concrete? Is a separate item of pavement removal? And what are we going to replace it with?
Well, where we've done that before for our existing forest main there, we didn't pour back the concrete. We slurried the trench and then asphalt on top of that. My experience on those old concrete roads is it's best to crack them if you have the opportunity so you don't have a rigid pavement underneath your flexible pavement.
Right. Down on sheet 36 of the plan and profile sheet is where it makes its turn from Quintana onto South Bay Boulevard. It's also where your pressures are the highest. What's the likelihood of a leak occurring right there? Especially when you test it, because your test pressures are going to be high. When you pressure test the pipe.
The pressure would be, the pressure testing would be done with clean water. I wouldn't want to venture a guess on the likelihood of a leak there or a breakage.
What kind of fittings are we going to have to make those turns?
Those will be ductile iron, restrained ductile iron fittings.
On PVC pipe?
On PVC pipe, yeah.
When you do test the pipes, pressure test them, where are you getting the test water from? It's going to take a lot of water.
I don't have the specific answer for that.
Seems to me that maybe you might be able to reuse some of that test water, fill up the force main 2 first, pressure test it, and then transfer that water into the other pipes. Pressure test them. The IPR line would have to be done separately. It has to be disinfected. And then it'll have to be disposed somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going to dispose all that water once you're done with it?
I don't have the specific answer to that yet.
When the maximum wet water flow occurs, are both force mains in operation?
That's correct.
And after that occurs, the large force main will have raw water sitting in it? Or will the line be purged after it's been used? In other words, it's going to be empty, and then all of a sudden you use it one day, and it'll just sit with water in it, wastewater.
Yeah, we have the ability to flush treated effluent through that pipeline to flush it.
Then on the the WRF plans, now that the annexation is on hold, I think Rob kind of spoke to us a little bit, but we don't need any permits from the county now? It's still in their jurisdiction.
No, no permits are required. There's previous court decisions and Attorney General's decision regarding agencies constructing facilities outside their corporate boundaries in other jurisdictions and not needing permits from that jurisdiction. And there's agreement between our city attorney and county council.
Along as the same thing with the pipeline contract, the contract with the design build team requires an updated estimate with 60%. It says that in their contract, and we don't have that.
There is no change to the there is no change to the GMP, the guaranteed maximum price, until change orders are brought through WRF CAC and through council and are approved by council.
Do we have an idea of the quantity of excavation that's going to occur at that site?
We do, but I don't have that off the top of my head.
They also, on that same contract with the design build team, section 3.2.3.1D, it says they're supposed to have updated schedules. Did they provide one at Black and Veatch?
The design build team provides updated schedules every month with their invoices, correct?
Because there's an old schedule shown on the Morro Bay WRF website,
yeah.
And it's so outdated. It'd be nice to see the updated one from the design build team.
Yeah, we take the information from the design build team schedules. We incorporated that into our programmatic schedule along with schedule updates from the conveyance facilities designer, and that's what goes into our program schedule. That's reflected in the monthly reports that go to council and the quarterly reports that go to CFAC and council.
But you are correct that schedule on the website is, yes, severely out of date.
Yeah, because you're supposed to be already under construction. According to that.
Close to done, I think.
Yeah, close to done. On the grading plans for the WRF site, they don't look anything like the plans that accompanied the CDP application in February. And I believe the condition of the coastal development permit is that they had to be in substantial conformity with those plans. So it's changed dramatically. It's not even close to what it used to look like. For instance, there's a huge fill on the west side of the property, I guess where you want to dispose your material. That's a 30-foot deep fill in a drainage.
I can't speak to what was included in the application for the coastal development permit. I'd have to go back and look at that. I do know that before we were given our coastal development permit, we had to meet a couple of special conditions. The first one of those is special condition one, which requires us to submit quote-unquote final plans and specifications for the WRF facility. Now, we know that with a design build project, we don't have final plans and specifications before we start construction. So we submitted those drawings along with a checklist that showed all of their requirements in special condition one. As you mentioned previously, there's a number of different conditions that the coastal development puts on the project, and how the drawings were, and how the project, as it's shown in the 60% drawings, is conforming with that. Those drawings were approved by the Coastal Commission and used as the basis for providing the coastal development permit.
The public lot area that you show in those plans doesn't look anything like what was in the MOU. It's changed. It's not even the same. And I'm sure the area is different, too. What's up with that? The boundary of the parcel that you want to grade in is not what's shown. I mean, the courses don't even match for the description of the land.
Yeah, so in the MOU, it was our best shot at what we needed for that land area. Through design development, we refined that. And we held the lot area the same but adjusted the boundaries. I think on the original, we had a weird dog leg going up by the creek that can't figure out why we needed that at one point in time. I think it it relates back to when the all of city maintenance operations were going to be out there. The site was larger. It was going to have all courtyard operations out there, and then we reduced the size of the site, so we didn't need to push back as far up that little canyon as we do now. So although we did need more land for to catch that slope that you talked about, so we added land there and subtracted it off, so the resultant area is the same, and the property owner has agreed with that purchase agreement.
The grading along the east side of the wharf site, it goes down to that proposed property line, which is the permitted area boundary. The California Building Code has a setback function of the fill height, which is H over 5 or 2 feet minimum, but they grade right down to that line. Shouldn't there be a setback?
We can check on the specifics of that and confirm the code requirement with the design build team.
I think I asked for this one time before, but the drainage calcs that were done to size those basins, did you get that? Do you have that information?
We have the drainage calcs, and we can provide those. Those drainage calcs were used as the basis for the work that we've been doing with the regional board and with the Coastal Commission in order to, as we mentioned, to avoid the need for the general stormwater discharge permit. And so, yeah, we have those calculations.
So in those basins, are they going to be they can't be infiltration basins, so they're going to store a certain amount of stormwater and then bleed out a smaller amount through a pipe. How are you going to attenuate that concentrated flow going out right into that stream that's there?
So the stormwater basins are designed to capture, I believe it's a 10-year, 24-hour storm. Storms of that magnitude would be captured and be sent pumped back to, at least on the treatment side of things, on the treatment side of within the fence. That gets pumped back to the headworks and it all goes through treatment. Flows in excess of the 10-year, 24-hour storm go and are discharged to the stream, and we can provide additional specifics on the stormwater system itself, but all of that information from the 60% drawings again was provided to the regional board and the Army Corps in order for them to make their determinations on the project.
There was a comment made, I guess it was from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, about how you're going to prevent the California red-legged frog from getting in those ponds. Is there something that you're going to do?
We're currently working with the Fish and Wildlife on the consultation process and coming up with the necessary avoidance measures that are going to be required for the frog. Those will be the avoidance measures that will be codified in the loan agreements with both the EPA and with the State Board.
The access road then that goes leaves the site back down to Teresa Drive. There doesn't appear to be any way of handling that improved runoff, the drainage. It looks like it's going to go and flood down onto the off-ramp of the freeway. Is there any way of attenuating that flow, that drainage?
I would just need to look at the drainage calcs to see what the specifics are on that.
Does Caltrans need to be involved with that aspect at that location?
They'll be involved in anything that affects their facilities there, so they'll need to look at those drainage details there.
How wide is that access road going in?
30 feet wide?
I believe so.
Yeah, 30 feet wide.
Curb and gutter? Or?
Didn't plan on it having it curbed and guttered at this point in time. Basically a rural-type driveway there.
Okay. All right, that's all I have.
Thank you, Paul. Very thorough. So I have a comment or question directed to Paul from our member that's not here today. And Mr. Rogers said he met with you. You gave him some very good information. He had some questions specifically about some of the sheds and other locations. Since he contacted me right before I got here, I didn't get into an elongated conversation. But is there anything that both of you discussed that you can share with us or that we haven't discussed here?
Yeah, I met with with Doug Rogers, and we kind of went through the plans. He definitely had some concerns on not, I shouldn't say concerns. He was very interested on the flow and the process, and asked, you know, what kind of cost savings measures we incorporated into the project. You know, I explained to him the different processes that we've done, such as eliminating flow equalization tank, going with a more technical solution to handle stormwater flows with a stormwater filter system. We talked about cost savings measures that we incorporated, such as doing an underground chlorine contact chamber, utilizing pipe instead of a concrete basin. So we definitely had a good conversation and just kind of stepped through the plans.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're not overlooking anything, because he was planning to be here, so I appreciate that. I'd like to open it up. Oh, go ahead.
A couple more things. Sorry.
Well, please. Sure.
So based on the plans that I saw, I have, you know, full confidence that the design build team can build this project. I'm a little concerned about the lack of involvement from an oversight agency. I was under the impression that the city was going to be issuing building permits, and then we would have a building inspector out there, you know, going over the architectural stuff more than anything. I mean, obviously the process seems like you guys have a good handle on that, but I just want to voice my concerns about the architectural parts of these. At the very minimum, I would recommend a third-party CASP, certified access specialist, review the plans and maybe even inspect a couple times during this process, if we are going to let the design build team inspect their own work and, you know, be oversighted by the Public Works Department, which not totally, you know, I'm not saying that you guys are incapable. I'm just saying there's some architectural features there that I think deserve some added consideration. I'm a little concerned also about the lack of I won't say a public hearing, but just for the public to weigh in on the architectural features of the facility once we have 100% design plans, and we can allow the public to weigh in on the look of the building, you know, the minor stuff, the tree placement, the architectural stuff. That's what, you know, that's what we get paid to do over here on this side, the Planning Commission side. So, I mean, I realize that you probably are not required to have Planning Commission approval. But I would recommend that at least we have some sort of a public opportunity an opportunity for the public to weigh in on the final architectural plans and provide some fefootback to you. Again, we are footing the bill for this thing, so I think we ought to have a chance to weigh in on how it looks. And it is right on the one, so that's just my opinion.
So that is one of the things. So the project's being the coastal development permit was issued by the Coastal Commission. They weighed in pretty heavily on the look and what's required there in terms of the architectural requirements for the facility. And they will also be involved at that level when we get to the point where we're looking at when they're looking at the details for the two pump stations as well in town.
And that's great. I just want to remind everybody that, you know, we're the ones paying $200 a month. So.
Thanks, Jess. Well stated. I'd like to open it up for public comment based on our discussion, questions, and answers. Please step forward.
Hi, Terry Simons again. Just a comment. I think if you're going to do these again where you have multiple projects, it'd be nice to be able to make comments between the segments of the projects rather than have to try to write notes or remember the whole thing. I was struck by Mr. Caceres' comment at one point on the wharf project about 50 feet from top of bank, and I made the same presumption before I looked at the plans, and then I realized that the 50 feet is actually from center line of the dry stream bed. His perhaps misstatement, I don't know, I haven't looked at the plans again, is very easily understood, since most of the time jurisdictions require a top of bank setback rather than a centerline setback, and that's what struck me at the time when I looked at the plans, how unusual it was that the setback was defined from the centerline of the stream. And in fact, there were several places where the setback didn't even make top of bank. And that was what prompted my earlier comment about the buildability of the access drive between the stream bed and the
property that the city is acquiring. I have another concern, and it was brought by Mr. Norris's comments about the bridge, pipe bridge. As I understand it, those are low-pressure lines going across that bridge, not the 200-pound pressure that starts from the second lift station. But nonetheless, there'll still be sewage, raw sewage under pressure. I'm very concerned because I have personal experience of trucks running off of roadways and taking out facilities, and this bridge is right adjacent to the Highway 1 South off-ramp, which would be a typical place for, say, a large semi to run off the road and go straight into the creek, except for the fact that there's now a critical infrastructure bridge right there that can easily be destroyed by a vehicle going off the road. So I recognize there's probably both environmental and economic concerns for not going through a trenchless bore under the creek. But aside from the aesthetic, the environmental, and the economic concerns, I think there's also a public safety issue there, since that's a very vulnerable link in the overall system. Fortunately, it's not in the high-pressure portion, but it's still a pressurized sewage line. Lastly, I think it's unfortunate, just as a member of the public, that this body has been so delayed in reviewing and making it possible for people like myself to make public comment to this process. As I understand the original timeline, even the most recent... Oh, the clock's working. Good for you. Thank you.
Anybody else for public comment? Okay. Thank you for those suggestions. I will close public comment. And then staff, a couple things. We had some public comment at the beginning. I know some of it was addressed during the presentation by Mr. Simon, as well as his last three comments. Any clarification or comments you would prefer to would like to make at this time, Eric or Rob or Joe?
I could just address the setback. So I may have misspoken. I would just need to look at the drawings, look at the environmental document, and make sure that those are all consistent, and check if it is indeed the center line or top of bank, and just confirm that those are consistent and that the drawings conform with those requirements. And I can we can address that when we summarize our comments and get responses back. I think that the other questions that Mr. Simons raised at the beginning of the meeting regarding the geotech report, the access roadway, which kind of is related to the comment that was made at the end, and as well as the stormwater pollution prevention plan, I think all of those were addressed.
Okay, thank you. And actually, on the suggestion, we do sometimes have a challenge with the public comment, whether we put it at the beginning or end. We like to hear the discussion and questions. So, but any of you are free to interrupt if we can do it on a more frequent basis when we have a presentation like this. Will we get copies of this presentation, the CFAC, or will that be posted on the website?
Yeah, we'll get it posted to the WRF website. Okay. As we... are trying to keep all the WRF documents on one place and better organized.
Okay. So do we have, before we adjourn the meeting, I just want to summarize. I know that you've been taking a lot of good notes. I also know we used that spreadsheet format when we were doing the Blue Ribbon Commission, and I think that was particularly helpful in the response and that. So I'm glad to hear you're still doing that. Do you need any clarification from any... what we discussed up here, or if Paul or some of you that had some written comments want to forward them on, that would certainly be appreciated. Do you need anything from us so that you can properly address this and before and respond back to us and City Council, I'm sure?
I think we have everything we need to summarize the comments.
Okay. Members, any closing comments?
Just one last one. I know you guys get, come in here and get beat up from us all the time, and I just want to
thank you for your hard work, and I appreciate the hard work you're doing. I just want to make sure you know that. So.
Thank you, Jesse. I agree. Anything else? All right. This was a special meeting. We don't have regularly scheduled meetings, but please, you know, we're here to serve and help, so feel free to schedule the next meeting, and I'll be happy to help you with a quorum check. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for your participation. Thank you. If you want to send your comments to him, go ahead and make sure he gets it all in that. I know sometimes they go back.